This is Science Friday. I'm Flora Lichtman. I don't know if you heard, but the place to be on August 21st is Hopkinsville, Kentucky. At exactly 1:24 p.m. Central Time, the sun over Hopkinsville will go dark for exactly 2 minutes and 45 seconds. And that's because this summer, the continental U.S. will have its first total solar eclipse in about 40 years. The path of the eclipse will stretch from the coast of Oregon all the way down to South Carolina, and Hopkinsville will have the longest stretch of darkness. And there is a group of solar scientists who are pretty pumped about this, and that's because the eclipse is a chance to learn new things about the sun. So while tens of thousands of people will be staring up at the sky this August, solar scientists will be taking photos and even flying through it. What about you? Are you an eclipse chaser? Do you have a question about what you can see during the solar eclipse? Give us a ring. Our number is 844-724-8255. That's 844-SCI-TALK, or tweet us at SciFry. Let me introduce my guests. Shadia Habal is a professor of astronomy at the University of Hawaii at Manoa in Honolulu, Hawaii. And Matt Penn is an astronomer at the National Solar Observatory and principal investigator of the project Citizen Kate. He's based in Tucson. Welcome to you both.
Good morning.
Matt, are you there too?
Yes, hi, Flora. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, thanks for being on. So let's start with the basics. What do you need? What are the ingredients for a total solar eclipse?
So shall I go ahead?
Go for it.
So the most important thing is for the moon to totally obscure the disk of the sun, the very bright disk of the sun, so that the outer atmosphere appears, because the corona, which is the crown of the sun, is a million times fainter than the bright solar disk that we see every day. So that's why we don't see the corona. So you really need to obscure it to be able to make the corona come out.
And Matt, when we need the moon basically to be exactly in line with the sun,
exactly.
Is that a pretty good way to describe it?
Exactly. And so, if you're thinking about your house, everybody has little specks of dust floating around, in their house. And you really can't see them normally, but if you have a bright light in a room and you block it out with your thumb, then the light reflects off of that light source, off of the dust and into your eye. So the same thing is happening during an eclipse. The sunlight is reflecting off the gas in the atmosphere of the sun and into our telescopes, but we really need the moon to block out the bright source so that we can see it.
I want to get back to the corona in a second, but before we do, I just want to go over some more eclipse basics for people who, citizens who are interested and might see it. I talked to some eclipse chasers for a podcast that I host called Every Little Thing from Gimlet Media about the eclipse experience, and here's how physicist and eclipse chaser Frank Close describes it.
And then the shadow of the moon is darkness. You see the night sky above you. You can see Venus and a couple of stars. And then as you come down towards the horizon, this dark dome turns into a deep purple and then a maroon. It looked as if life and energy and everything had been sucked off into the depths of space. In that moment, everything that you take for granted has suddenly gone.
This sounded really intense to me. Matt, is that your experience of seeing an eclipse?
Some of what he describes is really beautiful, and I think the corona is a really beautiful object in the sky, but when the sun goes away, it's wrong. The sun's not supposed to go away,
It's scary.
So, yeah, it is, and I like to think of it, if you're a rabbit and the shadow of a hawk passes over you, you know that something's wrong. You're about to be eaten and you need to run. And so maybe that's a similar feeling that we have as the shadow of the moon passes over us. We get some sort of primal urge and some realization that this is wrong.
I feel very compelled to see it. Shadia, you are an eclipse chaser yourself.
Well, yes, I do it for science. Yes, for scientific purposes.
How many have you seen?
Well, I've tried to see 14, and we were clouded out by 4, so I would say I've seen 10 eclipses. And my experience is slightly different. I don't find it ominous. I just find it awe-inspiring. It's an incredible sensation when you see the corona appear. I mean, this is what's so fantastic. All of a sudden, everything dims, and then you have this gorgeous aura of light around the sun that just comes out, and you have the impression that the streams are going out to infinity.
And we can't usually see that, right? It's too bright.
That's right. The disk of the sun is way too bright, so you have to block it, as Matt was explaining, to be able to see this outer atmosphere, because the intensity of the disk is a million times more intense than the surrounding corona. So you really need to block it.
And what scientific questions are you interested in about the corona?
So what's puzzling about the corona that was discovered in 1869, also from a total solar eclipse, was the fact that it's actually a very hot atmosphere. The surface of the sun is around 6,000 degrees. It has dropped from the center where you have nuclear fusion from 10 million to the surface of 6,000. And then all of a sudden, the temperature starts to rise. Now, the difference is...
Wait.
Yes.
It gets hotter as you go farther away from the center.
No, as you go farther away from the surface.
From the surface.
So you go from the center to the surface, it drops, and then it starts to go up again.
That's so puzzling.
Yes. So that's the biggest puzzle, and we're still trying to figure out what are the processes that are allowing this gas to all of a sudden get hot. Now, mind you, that gas is very, very tenuous, so the density is much, much lower than the surface. So let's say it's like sticking your hand in an oven without touching the, you know, the racks or anything. So you feel the heat, but you really don't burn yourself. However, because of this very high temperature, you have some elements in the corona. For example, all the elements you find on Earth, iron, chromium, nickel, whatever, they have been stripped of a large number of electrons because it's so hot. And as they're losing all these electrons and they get ionized and excited, they emit a certain light of a certain color. So we try to capture this light to be able to get some clues as to what's causing this hot corona.
So the light, you can trace back from the colors that you pick up to understand better what's happening, you know, what chemical processes are happening?
Yes, we try to do that. That's what I'm doing.
I saw a picture that you created. It was just beautiful. Really, it's a nice, yes. It's a nice product of the data. It's really lovely.
Thank you.
Matt, tell me about Citizen Kate.
Oh, yeah. So Citizen Kate is the Citizen Continental America Telescopic Eclipse Experiment. And so now you see why we call it Kate. but the idea is to spread identical telescopes across the entire continent and during the eclipse to take data to look at some science questions. We have volunteers across the country, and they range from middle schoolers through high schoolers up to, you know, retired solar physicists who are going to operate the equipment. And then a key part of the experiment is that after the eclipse is over, the various groups get to keep their equipment and continue on with other astronomy projects using that in the future.
And what do you want them to look for?
So, you know, the corona is a mystery, as Shadia was mentioning. One thing that we think is we're going to see in our data are these polar plumes. So above the north and the south poles of the sun, we expect to see these really thin threads of gas, which are constrained by magnetic fields. So what we know is happening from our observations from space and from the ground is that at the bottom of these plumes, the gas is not really moving very much. But at the top of these plumes, about 2 solar radii, we know that the gas is moving about 60 miles per second. It's really flying. This is part of the solar wind, this flux of particles that comes from the sun.
I was going to ask, is this the same as solar weather? Is this like a variety of solar weather?
It's a type. And you can think of a terrestrial analog. So if a storm comes along on the Earth, you need to understand the wind that's blowing it along to be able to predict where it's going to hit and what it's going to do. So the sun emits flares and basically storms in the solar wind, and the solar wind carries it throughout the solar system, and it may impact the Earth. So one of our goals is to understand how the solar wind is accelerated to get some basic understanding about how we can then predict solar weather better or space weather better.
And citizen scientists will be helping with this effort? That's so cool.
It's a real team effort, and I'm just really enjoying working with a lot of the people. A lot of people, of course, are volunteers. Many are students. They're getting to use some really interesting equipment, and, you know, you can tell they're excited about it, and they'll get to experience the eclipse as well. And then it's a win-win. We get a unique data set as scientists to understand the eclipse and the processes in the solar wind that we wouldn't get otherwise.
Let's go to the phones. Janet in Hillsborough, Virginia, you're on Science Friday. Do you have a question?
I do. I'm wondering, to be able to look at the eclipse and view the corona, do you need any special viewing equipment? Just get a pair of sunglasses or just with a naked eye, can you watch it?
Oh.
Yes.
Go for it.
Before totality, what you'll need to use are some special solar viewing glasses. So regular sunglasses won't work, but when any part of the bright solar disk is visible, you need a special glass, solar viewing glasses to protect your eyes. But it's key that when totality happens, that is when the last bit of the bright sun is covered up, you can take off these solar glasses and just look at the corona with your naked eye. It's about as bright as the full moon.
Are these things going to sell out? Like, do we need to get our glasses in order now?
Yes.
Probably.
Definitely.
Yes. Yes.
Did that answer your question, Janet?
Where do you buy them? On Amazon? Or where can you find glasses like this?
I think
Rainbow Symphony is one source. It's a company that sells them. It's called Rainbow Symphony, so you can look them up online.
For all your solar eclipse needs. Matt, I heard also that you were going to put together like a supercut, actually maybe the opposite, a director's cut of the eclipse from some of the photos and movies you were getting back from your team of citizen scientists.
Right. So the idea is that at any one location, like you mentioned in Hopkinsville, you'll see the corona for about 2 minutes. But by having a string of telescopes across the country, it'll take 90 minutes for the shadow of the moon to move from Oregon to South Carolina. And so if we can stitch together the data from all of our telescopes, we'll be able to observe the dynamics and the changes in the corona over a 90-minute period of time. So, I'll be in Idaho, but after the eclipse is over there, I'll be in a little dark room trying to get data from all of our various sites and stitch it together to form a rough-cut movie that night.
Will I be able to watch it on YouTube?
Yes.
Shadia, I heard that people would be flying through the eclipse. Can you describe what that's about, what the goal is, and have you done that?
I haven't personally done it, but in 2015 we had a small group from my team who were on a flight over close to the Faroe Islands, because the totality also went over the North Atlantic and over the island of Svalbard. So we were on land on Svalbard. But the people who were on the plane got to see it. It's of course, you're above the clouds, but then it's very difficult to collect data because of the very slight vibrations in the aircraft, even though, you know, they were reduced with some gyros and whatnot. But there is a NASA airplane that's going to fly above the clouds to observe to collect a spectrum of the sun during totality. And this is to maximize the chances of obtaining observations, because the biggest fear is to have a cloud or to have rain during totality. So when you go in above the clouds, then you maximize your chances, but then it becomes much more expensive because you have to take special provisions for the jitter in the aircraft.
I'm Flora Lichtman, and this is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Shadia, can you study the sun by simulating a solar eclipse in the lab or by observing other stars?
Simulating? No, you don't. You can't do it by simulating in the
lab. I guess I mean, could you take a telescope and block out the sun and look at the corona that way?
Yes, of course you do. And this is what's done in most space-based telescopes that look at the sun in the visible part of the spectrum, the part that we see with our eye. But the difference between those and the total solar eclipse is that this blocker that they use, which is a man-made blocker, is fairly small. And then it doesn't see the beauty of the eclipses is you start to look at the corona from the solar surface out to several solar radii. With a man-made occulter, you are limited to the distance range that you can cover. So sometimes you lose details that you can only see during a total solar eclipse.
Let's go to the phones again. JD from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Welcome to Science Friday.
Yes, hi. I'm an avid listener, first-time caller. I've got an interesting story. When I was way back in high school, a little solar eclipse of 71, 72, I don't remember exactly what year, I was so enamored with the solar eclipse that came across our little South Georgia town, Hinesville, Georgia, I set up a mirror in the back of my mother and father's jewelry store and rebroadcasted the sun's eclipse onto a screen where you could see it, you know, not having looking directly at it. And again, that's what made me get all enamored with all things solar, and then later to become, which now I'm a retired renewable energy executive, but that's what got me all renewable energy. That's what made me Solar Man JD.
Wow.
And it was all because of that total eclipse that we got to view in the 70s, in early 70s there in South Georgia.
Oh, wow. Will you be going to see the eclipse this year?
Well, I'm going to do my best to. I'd love to be able to, but I will be watching because I believe the doctor there is going to be doing a live simulcast of his group that's going to be doing it. So I will definitely be watching the live simulcast. And all the young children that need to watch it and see it, and hopefully some of those minds will work the same way that we had, that impressed on me at such a young age to go into all things solar.
I love that idea. Thanks, JD.
Sure.
Matt, that mirror trick, I'd never heard of that. Is there any like fun things that people can do during the eclipse or things that people should plan to do during the eclipse?
Oh, yeah, certainly. If you have a pinhole in just a piece of cardboard, you can project an image of the sun onto something and see the crescent during the partial phases. But you don't really need just a pinhole. During the phases where there's just a little bit of a crescent left, any shadow looks very strange. So you could hold up your keys and see that they have little crescents where normally they would have straight lines and edges. You could look under trees and see an array of little crescents projected onto the ground rather than normal sunlight.
We're going to have to leave it there. We've run out of time. I'd like to thank both of you. Shadia Habal is a professor of astronomy at the University of Hawaii at Manoa in Honolulu, and Matt Penn is an astronomer at the National Solar Observatory and principal investigator of the project at Citizen Kate.